VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And I want to welcome everybody on this super special weekend with one of the great events of the year happening. And you are listening to it. This is week one of year five of the VanWee Financial Hour. And if you've got nothing better to do, there's some football on tomorrow, too.
That's right. There is.
Mm-hmm. It's a great weekend.
Unfortunately,
all in all,
the two wrong teams are playing, but
yeah, well, at least one wrong team is.
Yeah.
that controversy will be very slow to die.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, it should be slow to die.
Yeah, no doubt.
The discussion now about how to cure that is interesting. Yeah, replaying 2 minutes or replaying a half or something.
Never
Come
happen,
on, people.
Never happen.
You know, life's like that. Once in a while, you get a bad call. And when it does, you get up and brush yourself off and go back to work, right? So, hey, anyway, everybody, all the regulars, welcome back. Glad you're always here with us. That's why we come here. And, of course, we are live, which I think you have had proven already since we're talking about what weekend it is. But if you really want to be sure, all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-TALK. It's 222-8255, and we will interrupt no matter what's going on and put you on the air, and we will discuss the things that you would like to talk about, so whether it's the market or whether it's how the politics affect the market, or if you want to know if you're inheriting money or just starting investing, or any topic in the world that you care to talk about, just pick it up. Anytime we don't know something, we will find out an answer, and right after the market wrap, I'm going to prove that by answering the question that came up last week that I did not have the answer to. But I promise, and I have it. And it actually makes some sense. So it's nice when your answers make sense.
That does help.
Yeah, it does. What can you say? Best January since, what, 1987?
Yeah, I'm going to say jobs, and more jobs.
Mm-hmm. Although there's some cautionary tales that go with that, too, but we'll get to that later.
Yep, it was another good week. The jobs report was released on a Friday, and leading up to the report, the media was telling us that we were headed into a recession, global growth was slowing, the market was going to crash, the government shutdown was going to slow hiring.
And Trump's an idiot.
Trump's an idiot, earnings season was going to be terrible, and basically the world as we know it is ending.
And the tax cuts are done, there's no more effect of the tax
no
cuts.
More.
That was a flash in the pan.
One-time deal.
Yeah.
Couldn't carry forward.
Yep.
So none of that came true. Instead, the job report on Friday was the most underestimated report in the history of the report. The estimate was for 172,000 jobs to be created in January, but instead the actual number was 304,000 jobs created in January. That means the quote-unquote experts missed their forecast by 77%. Only economists and weathermen can get away with numbers like that.
Even in horseshoes, you're not going to win.
Despite the blockbuster number, the markets were not going crazy on Friday, mainly due to Amazon shedding almost 100 points off its stock, which is just over 5% because it's $1,600 stock. Despite having a record holiday season, and they had strong top and bottom line numbers, and pretty much all in all a great quarter, they forecasted their earnings to weaken in the quarters ahead. So I'm suspicious. I think they're taking advantage of a really good quarter. And lowering expectations so they can blow them out of the water this
year.
And
Jeff is one of hundreds of CEOs doing that, and you can tell it by looking at the guidance.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't drop your guidance that much.
No.
When things are going like this, except for one reason.
I mean, it just doesn't.
You want to win.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense because so many people are going to work and therefore have more free cash flow, and they're spending it at Amazon.
Yep.
I just don't buy it. Call me skeptical, but I don't buy it.
Well, I've been arguing about this for months on the show, that the expectations people have gotten totally nuts.
Yeah, that's true.
They've raised the expectations over and over and over until it's hard to beat them. And then when you don't beat them, they come down on you for lying about it.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, but we're two can play that game, and they are. And when you look at the 3 months from now when the earnings season kicks in after Q1, you're going to see a lot of beat rate, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
My prediction.
Yep, despite the flat day on Friday, the market managed to have a pretty nice week. The Dow was up 1.3%, the NASDAQ 1.4%, and the S&P up 1.6%. In 2019, the S&P is now up 8%, and the NASDAQ is up 9.5%. If you go back to the recent lows on Christmas Eve, which basically is just an extra few days tacked onto this year, the S&P has now rebounded 13.1% and the NASDAQ 14.7%. That is a pretty sharp turnaround. And we still haven't set any new record highs, but we're a heck of a lot closer than we were a month ago.
We're 1,887 points on the Dow from a new high, and that's 7.53%.
Okay.
Just on the Dow.
This turnaround hasn't been just in the U.S. either. We're seeing some solid performances overseas, surprisingly. I haven't said that in a while.
Mm.
Led by Brazil, which has gained almost 19% this year, emerging markets have posted a nearly 10% gain on the year. Canada is up more than 13%, Russia just under 13%, and China more than 10%. Even the stagnant European markets are getting into the mix, gaining between 5 and 8%. This is very strange considering that a month ago, the media was telling me that there was a global recession that was imminent.
Yes, and you were arguing that then how come the trade numbers are larger than ever?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it. So don't look now, but commodities seem to be turning around from their recent slump. The commodities basket is up more than 8% this year, which has been helped by oil's 20% rise. Meanwhile, natural gas, which I can't figure out for the life of me how that trades, has slid more than 10% this week during the coldest week of the year.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. You would think the exact opposite, but
yeah, there's just so much supply right now.
And by the way, a polar vortex, is it just me, or did that just used to be called the winter storm?
there's that.
What? Come on. Jeez.
I've heard a lot of names. The polar vortex, somebody thought they invented it. They pulled it out of the 1950s, I think.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's winter. And you know what my forecast is?
Cold.
Getting warmer by summer.
Yeah. Unreal.
Hippy-dippy weatherman part two.
Gold and silver also got in on the action this week, gaining a little more than 1%. However, if you are worried about a spike in gold due to things that you think might happen in the economy, don't, because it's up just 2.5% this year. But it's definitely not a rush buying into gold.
No, it's actually got a nice chart.
Yeah.
Got a nice, gradual, slow upward chart, and it looks real pretty right now.
So the economic data was kind of all over the place this week, and trying to figure out what's going on in the national housing market these days could take an advanced degree in data analytics. It's all over the place. November new home sales were finally released after being delayed for the shutdown, and it showed a much stronger reading than the forecast. However, pending home sales was a big miss this month. Mortgage applications were down more than expected. Home prices are rising slower than they were. So what's going on?
Pretty much everything good.
Well, no, not necessarily.
Right. I looked over that list of misses, and most of that is just those same expectations going crazy.
That's true. So,
you know, it only in Washington, D.C., if something's supposed to go up 10% and they cut it back to 9%, only in D.C. is that a cut. Only in economics is that a miss.
Yeah, home prices rose at just over 5% instead of 5.5%.
And so at 5.5%, it goes too fast, and you really don't want to be involved in that. So anyway, things are good. We are going to have a trivia question. Adam has it as soon as we get back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour on Super Bowl weekend. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the trivia question today, which Adam has, is brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 904-636-7888.
So if you're a regular listener to the show, you've heard us talk about the FANG stocks. And that acronym is FAANG. It stands for Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. And the reason that we talk about it is they really drove the market in 2017. Not as much in 2018. And what I would like to know is what percentage of the S&P 500's total market cap is made up of those five stocks. And I will take a number. Well, there's two numbers I'll accept, two whole numbers that will work because it's right in between
the closest
two.
Yeah. Integer either way.
Yep.
All right. Very fine. All right. We saw on Thursday morning a spike in initial claims for unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not really very surprising given the fact that for the last month there was a partial government shutdown. Now, this is not something that impacts the government employees because they're actually getting paid even if they're not working. But it did impact a lot of government contractors because they stopped getting paid. And if I were a government contractor, I would immediately lay off the people working on that contract. And I believe that's probably what we saw.
Absolutely. And then they probably got rehired this week, too.
Exactly. So. But meanwhile, the jobs numbers came in, and it was almost like it never happened.
Yeah, well, the initial jobless claims spike from 199 to 253. 253 is still a really, really low number, so that is not concerning to me whatsoever. The number that you want to watch there is 300,000. If claims go over that, then maybe we would start to worry. But right now, the trend is clearly down around 200,000, and this is a spike that I expect to revert back to the norm next week or the week after.
Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, the government numbers were actually very good, but 304,000 was, it really caught everybody off guard.
Mm-hmm.
But little notice was the 90,000 reduction that they pushed back to December, and I'll tell you all why. Every January, the Bureau of Labor Statistics that handles all of this stuff does what they call population control, and I do not want anybody to think that I'm a Robert Malthus fan or anything like that. Population control merely means that after 12 months of estimating population changes, what they do is they get a better feeling for it and they adjust to what they believe is closer to accurate. So what that does is it changes January relative to December. And you can never take the January numbers with the same kind of veracity that you would for any other month of the year. But what I like to do is add up December and January and divide by two, because that change has occurred, and it makes it more relative.
So that would be about 250,000 in this case?
Over 200.
Yeah.
And then I also like to have a validation when something really big is going on. And fortunately, the ADP company does their monthly private payroll survey, which came in for January 213,000, which is just about dead on. So I believe that December and January is a very accurate overall look at what's going on in the economy. And I looked all morning. I couldn't find any bad news in the economy.
I mean, there isn't very difficult. Much. There isn't much.
And the things that were down are up. It sounds like Al Gore, don't I? Things that were up are down. The market is rebalancing itself. Telecommunications was in the top three. Energy was in the
Energy
top three.
Energy is leading the way.
Yeah. And those are things that were lax last year. But right before we came on, Adam and I were discussing the philosophy of modern portfolio theory, which, if you want to put it in a nutshell, says diversify your holdings. You never know when a little market shift is going to happen. Something that was so unpopular, which telecommunications were for how many years now? About four? I can't remember the last time people liked them. All of a sudden, they're going crazy.
There is no telecom sector anymore. It's communication services,
right.
And it is up the third most of any sector this year, 11.36%.
Yeah, they did a good idea. It didn't occupy enough weight. You basically had Sprint, Verizon, and AT&T. And they wanted more representation in there because any one of those that had a good or bad year could really impact the index. So all in all, there are times when you think you can do nothing right, like 08, where everything went down, everything. And you think, man, and then, of course, you'll always read during the latter stages of a period like that, you'll always read things that start this way. Is modern portfolio theory dead? And everybody jumps on the bandwagon and says, oh, yeah, it's going to be a stock picker's market now for the rest of ever, but you can only expect returns of 4 to 7% forever. And it's then they a year later, they're write the stories and said, hey, modern portfolio theory is still working. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, Adam and Steve.
How are you?
Okay. Great January. What do you think of February? I mean, historically, February's not been a great month.
No, it hasn't. And I would say if we can creep along, we had a couple discussions on the office this week, and Adam and I said, well, we've got about half of December's carnage back. All the portfolios are back around 50%.
Yeah, roughly.
Of the loss from December. And we think it might take through the end of March to get back closer to whole. I frankly don't want it to go up at the pace that January went up anymore.
No, and I said the same thing last January, mm-hmm. and look what happened. It immediately crashed in February. But I don't think we're looking at that same scenario this February, but I don't expect February to be a great month.
No, I don't want stupidity to follow stupidity, and I firmly believe that December was stupidity, and January was just getting the overshoot back.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think we might be in for a steadier and more sane market for a while.
But hey, what do we know?
Yeah, nobody knows for sure. But what are you thinking, Chuck? You got a feeling for it?
No, it sounds about right. I mean, what I'm thinking is it's going to be consolidation.
Yeah.
A month of consolidation.
I like that. Yeah, that's a good term for what's going on right now, I think. And there's one thing that I really liked this morning as I was reading through all the show prep materials. The bullish sentiment dropped about 7 points this month. And that is the best news ever. Whatever people think, they're wrong.
they put that on Investors Business Daily, the sentiment readings.
Uh-huh.
What day of the week does that get published?
I don't know. I usually not don't sure. pick it up until the weekend
yeah,
when our
me neither.
Gurus have consolidated all our data for us. So we usually read it on Saturday morning. It's down around 31.7, I think, right now.
Actually, it's been pretty 38, pretty 39. Even split, bullish and bearish sentiment.
Yeah,
right
it's
now.
About a third again. So I like that. You know, when it gets up in the 40s and 50%, you know something bad's going to happen because mom and pop are buying 100 shares or 2 shares or whatever, and they're always wrong, too. So I like it just the way it is. We're in the Cinderella moment, as far as I can tell. We're just stay the course. Do what you do.
Well, this is what it says on IBD. It says the Bulls versus Bears weekly survey of newsletter writers is published by Investors Intelligence. And right now it's at Bulls 45.8%, Bears 20.60%.
Yeah, they're,
okay, that's a little
they're
bit
sampling
different.
A little bit different population, obviously.
And what we're, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the source of ours is. But these people we use are I think they're the primo statistical people in the market arena, and they're not cheap, but they're certainly worth it. So, I don't know. You're only as good as your guesses. You look back and see what the predictions have been over time, and you know you got to temper everything with your own personal look around. What do you think is going on? Does it make sense with what I'm reading? And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. So,
you know,
we'll see.
It's possible if we get a trade breakthrough deal with China that could be a sell the news type situation because of the market's trajectory. I mean, we've had this V-shaped recovery, and I don't know. Do you think it would be a sell the news
by the rumor? I think what you'd see is an initial positive reaction. I don't know that I'd sell on it though. Now that's a tough one. Is it? You notice they're kind of greasing the skids for this thing. You notice that the little tidbits that are coming out over the week?
Yeah, it's happened for 4 weeks now.
Uh-huh, so. You see the Chinese people and the American people sitting in the White House in their negotiating room. Everybody's smiling and having a good time. It looks to me like we are being prepared for a nice little agreement, I guess I'd say, and the market is going to love it when it actually gets done. Now, will China live up to it? That's maybe when you want to sell the news.
Fair.
Okay. Yep. It's hard to say. But we're optimistic right now, as we generally are.
I am, too. I mean, I think it's setting up nicely. And, you know, if we go sideways in February, I think a lot of us would be pretty happy.
I'd be very happy with that.
We can keep what we got. That's a big deal to me.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more. Time will tell, won't it?
So, Chuck, what percentage of the S&P 500's market cap is made up by the FANG stocks?
My guess would be 12%.
You got it. It's actually
really?
12. Yeah,
that's a pretty good guess.
Yeah, it's actually 12.8, but I was going to take 12 or 13.
So. Do you have his address on file?
We do.
Okay, but in case you don't hear from us, that'll mean we don't have it. But Adam's pretty good. He keeps records of everything. Nice job.
Okay.
Very Thank good. You, got a, you got a dog in the hunt for this weekend?
No, I really don't.
I don't either. I hope the Jaguars win.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. You have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to have to take a break, and I'm going to answer the W-4 question as soon as we get back, because there were some changes in the tax law, and we had last week what I thought was an extremely intelligent question about a topic that pretty much impacts all of us, and sure enough, there was an answer, and I got it. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back. This is the Banwe Financial Hour on Super Bowl weekend. Welcome back to the Banwe Financial Hour. This is Steve Banwe.
And I'm Adam Banwe.
And on the phone, we have Devin. Good morning.
Hey. Hey, good morning, boys.
How are you today?
I'm happy. I just wanted to thank you for the advice you had given me about calling the Social Security. Now, I'm 63.
Uh-huh.
And I thought I had to wait till I was 65 or whatever for my Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And you had told me, well, you know, no, I didn't have to wait that long. And if I apply, I can get half of my husband's Social Security benefits. Which is great.
Uh-huh. It is,
and so,
it is available, although somewhat reduced, but it's available if you're 62 or over. And if you're looking for cash flow, why not?
It was great advice. From the moment I called, they said, well, your money will start from this day that I called. And even though it was like 2 months later before I could have the meeting with them, which was a phone message, I mean, on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Well, good. It just makes me happy.
Yeah. And
People don't know. That's called a restricted filing,
yep.
Where you're not filing on your own benefits, you're filing on your spouse's benefits. People don't know these things exist, and they don't know that it isn't going to hurt you. It does not reduce your benefit that you've accrued over your lifetime in any way, shape, or form.
Well, that's not necessarily true.
Well, it depends on the day you file. It reduces what you'll get,
yes.
But it doesn't reduce your benefit level.
No, it doesn't reduce your actual benefit, but it will reduce when you hit full retirement age. You will not get your full amount. You have reduced that amount by a few years.
All right, let's take that
percent a year.
Well, listen, guys, honestly, I've got cancer and you know, I'm not going to live 100 more years. I might as well collect now.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is great. And listen, Adam, I want you to tell your father I love his voice and he sounds just like him.
I'll let him know.
Yeah, he won't tell me anything like that. He's afraid I'll get a big head.
You guys. I just
love it. Thanks, Devin.
Thank you, and I'm so happy. And the reason I'm doing this whole series on Social Security is it's so complicated, and unless you know what can be done, you don't have an idea what to do. And we never told you to file. We told you to ask, and you did, and look at that.
I called, and from that moment that I called, even though it was going to take 2 months before I could get an appointment with him, my money started from the day that I called.
Isn't that nice?
My collecting. And I could have been collecting for over a year now.
Yeah, but you're going to make 8% more because you waited this long.
That's right.
So you look at the bright side of everything, and you're looking good.
Well, it's great because I get half of my husband's pension, which is very great.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's great. Thank you.
You need the money now. Take the money now. That's the first rule.
Yeah,
money sooner is better than money later. More money is better than less money. Fundamental rules of cash. So,
well, it sure is.
There you go. And you're not going to lose a lot of it to taxes if you're living on Social Security. So that makes it even better.
Oh, that does make it better. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
A pleasure.
I love your show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend.
Bye-bye.
All right. In the old days, when you were planning your taxes, you went to your employer, and one of the first things they'd hand you would be a W-4 form, and that said, how many exemptions do you have? you were one, your spouse was one. If anybody was blind, that was one. If anybody was 65 or older, that was one. And each kid was one.
And what did that do? Explain what that did.
Well, that changed the withholding on your paycheck. And it did it by estimating the amount of your income that would not be taxed due to personal exemptions.
Right.
So our very erudite caller last week said, what are we going to do now? There are no personal exemptions. You can't count them. And I said, very honestly, I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I know IRS addresses issues like this, so I'll find out and tell you. Well, IRS addressed it on February 28th, 2018. This is dated. They did it before. They altered the old one. They did the new one, but I hadn't had the question before. So here's what happened, because the law itself didn't apply until the tax year 2018. So it was the 2017 form where you're predicting your income for 18. So this form now, if you're going to look forward for the year 2019 based on what happened in 2018, here's how you do it. It is still called the W-4. It's the 2018 form W-4, Employees Withholding Allowance Certificate. See how that there's no word exemption in there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It had there had been a notice on it, but you could still use the old one for 30 days. But now this new one is up and running. So IRS also has a calculator that goes with its form W-4 so that you can judge for yourself based on other factors using the new increased standard deduction, no personal exemptions, increase in the child tax credit, so you have to list your children, limited or discontinuation of certain deductions, and it changed the tax rates and brackets. So all the new law has been consolidated into this calculator. So get all that available. Go online, get the calculator. It's not something you report to the IRS. It's just something that you work on. And then if there are changes needed in your W-4 to reflect the new reality, then you can go ahead and use the new form W-4 and reflect it. So if you want to not come out owing money, or if you want to not come out getting a whole big refund where you're giving them a tax-free loan, but you're trying to project a little bit better, I would do that. But if I were you, I wouldn't necessarily do it till I see this year's tax return, which is the 2018 tax return that's due by April 15th. The reason being the effect on your own personal situation, unless you really understand this law, may not be very clear to you. And if you make a big mistake one way or the other, you're probably going to regret it. So I would take the information from my tax return, then go to IRS and say, I want the W-4 calculator, input all the numbers, and see how your withholding as is going to apply to 2019. If it needs changing, fill out a new W-4 and give it to the employer.
Yeah.
Or if you're a quarterly filer, of course, you just adjust your own quarterly.
In general, if you get a big refund from the government, that means that you're withholding too much on your taxes. Mm-hmm. So you would want to then increase your what used to be called exemptions. Mm-hmm. What is no
it's
longer
now allowances.
Allowances, yeah. And vice versa, if you end up owing money, you need to increase your withholding. So reduce your allowances.
So an excellent question gets a relatively easy answer. And yep. Off we go. So good. All right. Dumbest headline of the week.
Man, this one is so good. It's so dumb. I had to read it. I've probably read it over 10 times. I couldn't even
and
believe it.
And I had found it independently and laughed my rear end off.
And it's not actually what it says.
No.
It's a concept. What it's implying.
Yeah.
So the headline is actually Fidelity's average retirement account balances dropped. The reason why may surprise you. And it might surprise you if you're a complete idiot. That's what it really should say.
Yeah.
Because, yes, in the fourth quarter of 2018, the average 401k balance at Fidelity dropped from $106,500 to $95,600. Why do you think that was? It goes on to tell us that it's because the market went down.
No kidding.
So
you mean people invest that money in their 401ks?
So,
who knew?
So they're saying that it might surprise you that in the fourth quarter, the average 401k balance went down. Well, guess what? The market was down almost 20%, so no kidding.
I could write a headline for today saying the average account balance at Fidelity went up in January.
Exactly.
And the reason why might surprise you.
Yep. So, yeah, the average account dropped about 10% in the fourth quarter. Shocking.
Yeah. And depending on the mix of assets, we've been noticing that our average people are 8 to 12%, something like that.
Yeah, or less, but more like 5 to 12.
Yeah.
Depending on how conservative they are.
Well, we had a great example yesterday. We're comparing two accounts side by side. One ultra conservative, one a risk taker due to a large age difference. And guess what? The risky one moves about twice as fast as the non-risky one.
In both directions.
Isn't that incredible? In other words, modern portfolio theory works. Every time it's tried, it just takes time. That's amazing, folks. It's just amazing how stupid some of these things you hear will be. All right, we got a few more things to cover after the break. I'm going to read one more headline that it's just unfathomable. But what the hell? Then I'm going to tell you about the baddest boys in town and how big this was and how to avoid it for you. So don't go anywhere. This is the Vanuy Financial Hour and Super Bowl week. Welcome back to Vanuy Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanuy.
And I'm Adam Vanuy.
And this particular segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Spring is on the way, according to Punxsutawney Phil this morning. It's going to be early, so get it lined up unless you want to do it yourself. You're kind of, you know, more ambitious than I would be, put it that way. All right, my favorite dumb one this week. China crashing. Is the U.S. next? China's growth rate dropped to what, 6.1?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
From over 7.
If we ever got to 6.1, do you know what the Fed would do? Probably bump the interest rate 3 points overnight to slow down the overheated economy. If that's crashing, give me a couple of quarters of crashing, please. Martin Weiss said this, whoever he is. And he goes on to say that we could follow. Thank you for your analysis, Mr. Weiss.
Yep, I had one too. So apparently Bernie Sanders was feeling left out of the money grab that has been going on by the Democratic candidates for...
Me too.
Yeah, I want to come up with the worst idea to steal money from rich people.
Exactly.
So he has proposed a estate tax of up to 77% on billionaires.
77%.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that would be basically the if you die and you've been successful and made a lot of money...
And paid a lot of taxes.
And paid a lot of taxes... You would then just hand it all over to the government. Makes sense to me.
Sure. And every billionaire that dies would contribute that, and the government would spend it in about 6 hours.
That's about
you
right.
Think I'm kidding? Figure it out.
No, that's about right.
All right. Bad boys. I know Howard loves to do these. Speaking of which, congratulations, Angela, on your new grandchild yesterday. But federal court has ordered Woodbridge Group of Companies, LLC, and its former owner, to pay $1 billion in penalties and disgorgement for operating a Ponzi scheme. A Ponzi scheme. Now, who would do that? The fellow's name is Robert Shapiro, and he was fine personally and the companies and all that. What they did, they are paying substantial penalties because... They operated a $1.2 billion Ponzi scheme that defrauded 8,400 retail investors nationwide. That means individuals rather than institutions and 401ks and all that. 8,400 individuals of $1.2 billion fraud. Many of them, and you all know this is where it really gets me, many of them seniors who had invested retirement funds. That is the lowest of the low when you're taking the retirement funds of the seniors. That puts you in the Lydia Kladeck model of people I would hold up as the example of how not to do life or anything else. So what's going to happen? Well, according to the SEC, The settlement provides for the return of significant funds to investors.
Notice it doesn't say all.
Doesn't say even
most.
Nope. Doesn't say half. It says significant. It's like those people who advertise for their little life insurance schemes and so on, and the equity index annuities. Investors make a reasonable rate of return. Okay, can you please look up reasonable and define it to me? I prefer numbers because that's the kind of guy I am. Anyway, the liquidation trust that they're forming will actually pay some of these people. What is my point here? This does not have to happen to people. There were also charged 18 of Woodbridge's highest earning unregistered sales agents who had sold more than $400 million of its securities to retail investors. All you have to do, if you're looking at putting your business somewhere, like Vanway Financial, which is where it belongs, you go to brokercheck.finra, F-I-N-R-A.org. And when it pops up, there will be a little tab, search by company. Type in Vanway Financial, hit return, and what pops up but a little box that says Stephen H. Vanway LLC, doing business as Vanway Financial. And then there's a little box under that that you check, and it takes you to the SEC website where you can find Adam and Steve and our registrations. We are registered investment advisors. We're state registered because we're small enough not to have to do FINRA. I would have no objection to it. Either one works fine. But we are there, and we are registered. 18 unregistered people, and nobody went to broker check. And we're not talking about having to be a stockbroker. That's any investment advisor who's registered for any reason with the SEC, which if you're going to do any business, you better be. It's just mind-boggling to me that all these people go there with hundreds of millions of dollars, and they don't take the simple step of going to brokercheck.finra.com. You don't have to be a victim, people. You just don't have to.
And to give you an idea of who these people were that got caught up in this, they interviewed one. Her name is Eileen Fruit Handler. She's a Florida school teacher and widow. She stands to lose $50,000 that she invested with Woodbridge. And she said, "I'm really shocked because I asked the guy who sold it to me, I can't tell you how many times, whether it was secure."
Oh, but what she didn't ask him was, are you a fiduciary?
Mm-hmm.
And if he said, yes, I am, then you go to brokercheck.finra.com and prove him wrong, and then you go to the SEC and file a complaint. It's just that easy.
Correct.
You don't be a victim, people. Listen to the show. Take the best advice we'll ever give you is not to get burned. That's absolute truth. All right, talking to Devin a few minutes ago. She's 63. And her husband is older, so she filed on half of his because he had already started collecting. What is your full retirement age? It is not 65 necessarily. If you are at full retirement age of 65, it means you were born before I was. But it changes, and it changes on a sliding scale. And these were all the things that were put in place back in the 80s, I mean, where Ronald Reagan and company gave people like me, who were young then in my 30s, they gave us about 25 or 30 years to know that we aren't subject to the same rules that our parents were subject to. They gave us decades to plan for this. And what happened was, if you were born before 43, you're already drawing because you're 70. If you were born before 1955, your retirement age is 66. If you're born in 55, it starts to get just a little bit longer. So every 2 months, 66 and 2 months, means you were born in 55, and then 56, 66, 4. So you add the 2 months until you get to a birth year of 1960 or later, and at that point your full retirement age is 67. So right now there is no person on earth that has to go past 67 to reach full retirement age. However, it is still true that if you delay every year, you get an 8% increase for the rest of your life. That's not done annually. That's done monthly. So if you are born such that your age is 67 and you wait 6 more months, You won't get 8% more, but you will get 4% more. So every month you are not claiming benefits, it tends to go up a little bit. But when you start thinking about full retirement age, remember that it's something of a moving target depending on your birth date. But once you plug in your birth date, it doesn't change. Now, my long-term prediction is there will be another one of these things done because the system is going broke and we're going to have to delay it. The reason is very simple. Y'all are living so long.
Yep, it's true.
Modern medicine and good nutrition and all that stuff, we're living a long time. You hear about declining birth rates. You have to listen to what they're saying. The American male's average life expectancy has gone down for 2 years in a row because it factors in things like fentanyl.
Opioids.
Yeah, and it factors in things like wars. Take out those people who are subject to the early ones, and the average person is living longer and longer. Plan accordingly. You must have a lifetime income that is significant enough that it will not run out in your life. And before you start investing your money, the first discussion you ought to have with your advisor is, how do I get or will I have enough lifetime income before we go into all the fun things you can do in the stock markets and so on? It is a planning thing. If your broker can't talk about anything but investing, can't talk about Social Security, employees, things like that, then I suggest you go to a registered investment advisor. And if I had to pick one, I think it might be Vanley Financial.
Oh, that's weird. I would agree.
Sounds like we're a little biased, and perhaps we are, but what the heck. We like it. Business has been good. We're starting off year five on the show. We're just about to start year five in the business, so come and see us. It's a lot of fun. We'll see you next week. I hope your team wins if you've got one. This is the Vanley Financial Hour.